week's episode of the Data Protection Made Easy podcast, hosted by Data Protection People. I'm the producer of this podcast, Miles Dacres, and for the purposes of this intro, I'm joined by our managing director and founder, Phil Brining, and also one of our lovely account managers, Jasmine Harrison. So thank you for hosting today's session, guys. How do you think that went?
Hiya, thank you, Miles. Yeah, I think it went well. Obviously, Phil's got a lot of knowledge in the area, so I'll let him take the lead on that aspect.
I think it was good. I mean, the trouble is I had it all, you know, the whole thing is like buzzing around in my head. And, you know, we tried to be structured about it. My fear is that, you know, like verbal diarrhea in terms of, you know, the key changes. But, I mean, I think you did a great job, Jasmine, of steering the conversation through the key changes, and again showed you got good you know overview knowledge of it. So we started off with a very quick recap about what the PCIDSS is, and then we got into some of the changes, and you know, like the formalization of the annual scoping exercise, and there's new requirements around, you know, specific explicit requirements now about defining ownership roles and responsibilities. We talked about some of the changes to the risk assessment process and hashing and malware and phishing, and you know, the changes to the authentication requirements, like changes to passwords. And we talked about the you know, the customized approach as well, which is, there's now two ways of attesting to compliance, is using the defined approach, which is a very prescriptive thing that people are used to. And then in some cases, for some requirements, you're allowed to have a customized approach, which sounds nice, you know, but it's not designed to shortcut. It's designed to, you know, it's a lot of work involved, we think, in you know, following this customized approach. So hopefully, I don't know if you thought we might have lost the audience, Jasmine, but I think we covered off most of the key changes. There's some new requirements, there's some changes, and again, in an hour, we didn't really have time to go into a lot of detail at a slow pace. We're trying to rush through it. So I think we've probably got some blogs to write, Miles, and put out, and some white papers about what those changes are and how it is going to affect people.
I think we do. I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because we try to not script any of these sessions. So when you don't script something that's so complex, you can just be all over the shop. So I think we will probably put together something much more structured in terms of a written article or white paper or blog. But yeah, in terms of a conversation, I think that's as good as a conversation as you can get unscripted around PCI. I think it is quite a complex issue, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it gave everyone a flavour of what the changes are. I feel like I definitely learned a lot through just listening and, you know, concentrating throughout.
I think that was the aim, because we've got some very, very technical people, you know, some fantastic people listening to our podcast who are much more technical than me. So they know about encryption and hashing and all that type of stuff. So I was trying to explain this, Jasmine, one time, and I was getting a little bit muddled up. So these people know what they're doing. What the objective of the session was to say, look, this is changing. It's changing fairly quickly. Some of the changes might require some major changes to technology. So we need to be on the front foot with this. We need to be aware of the changes, broadly what they are. And we need to be planning to be compliant by the 1st of April 2025, when we have to be compliant to the new standard. Now, if you've got that across, then, you know, that's good. But if people have got extra questions, obviously we've got a QSA practice, we're knowledgeable in the area, you know, and we can help people to unravel the mysteries of the version 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just confused people so they would reach out. It's a bit simple.
Yeah, to be honest, Phil, I bet you were in your element, you know, you didn't have anyone trying to shut you up. You were able to ramble on for a change.
No, it would have been good to get some audience interaction, but I mean, you know, it's
new, isn't it? It's new, so I think a lot of people have seen it as informative rather than, you know, being able to offer their own opinions. I'm sure that will come again in the future, and maybe once they've read our blogs as well.
Indeed. So well, I think it's about time we let the listener get into the main body of the session. Without further ado, I'll leave you in the capable hands of Phil Brining and Jasmine Harrison.
Hi, everyone. I'm not Ollie. My name is Jasmine. I'm joining Phil on our weekly podcast this week on PCIDSS. I think Ollie will be returning next week. He's been rude enough to abandon us for a couple of weeks now to go on holiday.
But, as is Dave.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, on his, I don't know, we get holidays. I don't know what you could do for Dave's name, a little pun. He's usually the person for that.
Away from homes.
Oh, that's a good dear, one. Oh dear.
Yeah, so we've got Holly on his holidays and Dave away from home. So I'm joined by Phil Brennan today, who is a QSA and an expert in PCI-DSS.
Oh, don't say that. You're setting me up for a fall here.
So we will take the normal approach of, talking through some of the news, and then we'll go into the meat of it. I don't know about you, Phil, but it's been a very slow week for data protection news.
Yeah, I've been head down bashing through, delivering some training, which has been good fun, and doing a load of work on, I've said this before, a lot of weeks on the ropers on OneTrust for a client, which is, again, that's quite fun, but quite time consuming. And what else have I done this week? I still haven't finished my PCI retraining, and I've got to do my every year, you've got to sit an exam as a QSA, and you have to pass the exam every year, which is good. I think, I think the same things should be the case for data protection officers, certified data protection officers, where you have an annual reassessment. So I've got to do that 17th of October, before the 17th of October. But I don't know if I've told you, Jazz, I'm going to Milan for 3 days. The PCI European Conference is in Milan in the middle of October. So I've booked myself on that. And I'm really looking forward to that, because I haven't been to Milan, and the Alpha Museum is about 10 miles or 10 minutes out on the train. So being a bit of an Alphisty, I want to go and see the Alpha Museum.
Very nice. You definitely kept that one quiet. If there's any other, data protection events coming up.
No, it's not data protection, it's PCI.
Yeah, no, but I don't know PCI as well. So.
No, but you need to come out then and learn about it. This is a perfect forum.
If you're inviting me, then I'll definitely take that. I'll hold you to it. This is recorded, remember?
Yes. Oh, yes, true. So I haven't really noticed anything of any note in the news. There's been a few bits and pieces in Lexology and a few bits and bobs on Mondac, but nothing. Yeah. I don't know if anybody else has seen anything that, we should be talking about as privacy practitioners.
Yeah, please do speak up. I did see an interesting article on a social media platform called Be Real. For those of you that don't know, it's a app that basically requires users to simultaneously take a picture at any random point in the day to encourage people to be real, show what they're actually doing rather than the facade that they show on other social media. But there are growing privacy concerns that people are disclosing, work information on their laptops and in office settings and things like that. So, with all the things that are going on with social media, companies at the minute, Meta being fined a week or two ago, it's just something to keep your eye on more than anything.
That reminds me of when I worked at Leeds United way back when, one of my colleagues, the ticket office manager, Doug Smith, went through a year and a half of doing photo of the day. But now, 20 years on, you go back over these, and it's amazing. It's this what it was brilliant to look back on. But that's interesting, because part of what we've been doing this week on the DPO training course was looking at what is personal data, and we've been looking at the guidance from the ICO and the European Data Protection Board, and photographs is just a really, I don't want to go on into it now, but photographs is a really interesting area. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure everyone here knows, and the guidance, what is the intent, what is the purpose of the photograph? So a photograph, it isn't, according to the guidance, necessarily personal data, but it might become personal data if you want to change the use of it. So fascinating, actually, this whole area of images and personal data and this app. But anyway, I'm rabbiting on now. Yeah. Which is not like me at all.
Yeah. I'm not sure, we'll see how good I am at keeping you in check, but I think one thing to be aware of is people taking pictures of their laptop screens, because it takes a picture in your front and back camera at the same time.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Right.
Yeah, so hopefully people are quite cautious with that at work. Obviously the advice is not to take pictures of your laptop screens, because it could have repercussions, but yeah, that's one thing. Another one is Uber are currently in the midst of a breach. So somebody who identifies themselves,
a personal data breach,
well, they can access Uber systems, including Slack, their internal messaging system. I'm not 100% sure the scale of what they can access, but I'm pretty sure that it's potentially customer data is involved.
Oh, right,
as well.
Right.
I don't think it's been confirmed yet. You're going to have to bear with my camera as well, by the way. It's very temperamental to pace, depending on how much sun's coming in. So, I might just disappear into the background, but still, yeah. So they can potentially access customer data, and they've identified themselves as an 18-year-old. I think it's just someone who's managed to get in. They've said that they did it because Uber's got weak security. We've managed to get into the systems and they're just having a bit of fun, really. So we'll see how that one progresses.
Interesting. I haven't seen that one. I mean, I have to say, I haven't been on really upon the news. I did read the daily newsletters, but I didn't notice anything with any particular interest.
So there you go.
That's a round of the news. I'm just going to ask you, actually, and I know that we're talking about PCIDs and we are going to, but I thought it interesting just to kind of get your, you know, I know you've recently changed roles, so into kind of this account management role. I just wondered how you were feeling your year as a consultant, you know, on the support desk. Does that help you in terms of talking to customers or?
Definitely. I've realised, so when I was last on one of these sessions, I was on the support desk and I wasn't probably as good at blagging my way through conversations. I'm much better at talking about data protection now. I have a lot of practice, you know, talking to customers daily, and I enjoy it. It's good. It's nice having that. I don't know how people would do account management without the data protection knowledge, because keeping up these conversations, it can be testing at times. But I'm not trying to sell myself for more of these sessions, but yeah, it's definitely helped. I'm enjoying it.
Very good. I'm just trying to. I've clicked on the wrong button here, so I was going to look at the hack that Brenda's put up, the Uber thing, but I've ended up clicking on the wrong thing, so it's taken me. I don't know where it's taken me, but I have lost these screens. Anyway,
I'm trying my best to keep on top of the chat. If anyone wants to just unmute at any time, button, please do.
I've lost everything. I've lost all the pictures and everything. Right, I need to try and figure out. Anyway, let's carry on. I will try and figure out how to get back to where I was.
While you do that, tell me about the DPO training course. How's that going?
Oh, it's going really well. I mean, yeah. I'm loving it. So we've got 10 people on it. We're doing two hours a week, twice a week. We've done the first two sessions today. Quite a boring session, but I think it's important to cover the history, you know, and the background to the law. So we talked about Younger Committee and the Lindop Committee, and you know where the laws come from, and the, you know, the principles and the European Council, you know, stuff that, you know, and how it's evolved. So yeah, it's always fascinating. I mean, a lot of these people know it, they're filling in their gaps, but people who don't know this, you kind of like, they think that the GDPR is new, and then they don't realize that in the early 70s, you know, Lord Younger put forward 10 data protection principles, and they're almost identical, you know, to what we've got in the current law. So we did that, and then we've done key definitions, and that was a good discussion around personal data and what is personal data. And I said, if you come on here for answers, you know, you realize it's even more grey than you thought it was. But what we're trying to do is equip people with the chat, with confidence, really, to know it's grey and how to try and clarify it and set their own parameters and their own policies and back up their decisions so that they've got a defensible position. So, you know, we haven't got all the answers, and we're going to look at controls and processes in a couple of weeks in detail. Again, that to me is a continuum and a grey area, and somebody is in a contract potentially as a processor and a controller, but for different aspects of that processing activity. So bringing that across to people, you know, we're all in the same boat. This is the reality of the situation. You know, it is grey, you know, and it's changing, you know, and it's open to interpretation. So we talked about the Rayner's case, and we talked about the Durant case, we talked about the Lindquist case, where, you know, where the interpretation of the courts has then influenced, you know, and the Skelton case, actually, you know, what is a data controller and the household exemption. So anyway, I'm going on again, but it's really good fun. I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
Look forward to hearing the progress. It is funny, though, you do find, you know, the more you learn about data protection, the more questions you have.
the more you read about it, the more you realise you don't actually. Yeah, there's more to it, you know. And we've been doing this for 20 years. Anyway,
PCIDSS.
Yeah, interesting. So we did a session a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? We really only just scratched the surface. We covered the basics of it. We covered, you know, and we're happy to go over this again, you know, how people know whether they're compliant and how people report their compliance and or test to their compliance, you know, which is...
I think it's worth going over a brief reminder for those.
So, I mean, just a couple of minutes, because I think this session was meant to be about getting into the detail of the changes. So that's what we're going to do. Now we're going to cover off about 10 or 12 big changes. So Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard, it's been around for quite a few years. It's a global thing set up by the major card brands like Visa and MasterCard and Japanese Credit, JCB, Japanese Credit Bank, I think, man's gone blank. And basically, it's a set of requirements that anybody taking card payments has to comply with. It's not the law. It's a contractual relationship between a merchant, you know, like a retailer or a service provider providing services to merchants who are taking card payments, and their banks. So, you know, if you break or don't comply with the PCIDSS, you're not breaking the law. You might be breaking the law, but what you're doing is you're in breach of your contract with your bank for taking card payments. And it's got a high level, it's got 12 major requirements. So, you know, firstly, you know, build and maintain a secure network, and secondly, you know, protect cardholder data. So it's pretty logical stuff, and actually it's the sort of stuff that we use when we're assessing GDPR security. You know, have you got a secure network? Have you got secure applications? Have you got secure devices? You know, how are you training people? That type of stuff. For what are you doing about monitoring it? So it's really good, I think, sensible stuff. But the PCI is incredibly prescriptive. Yeah, so we've been working with version 3.2.1 for quite a few years, and version 4 is there, and there's now a timetable for implementation. And basically, the current version 3.2.1 is obsolete as of the 31st of March 2025, and there's a leading period now to try and get things sorted out. And there's quite a lot of changes, and that's what this is all about. It's trying to highlight what those changes are, and you know, some of them are going to be relatively easy to implement, and some of them won't. So the PCI looks at things that influence the cardholder data environment, where your cardholder data is in your database systems, cardholder data being, you know, like the long number, the CVV code, the expiration date, anything on the chip or the magnetic track, you know, that's all cardholder data. So that's what we've got to protect. We've got to protect that cardholder data. Version 4's there. We as QSAs have all got to retrain on the version 4. This conference we're going to in Italy in a couple of weeks' time is all about, you know, version 4, so it's going to be fascinating. So I'm looking forward to that. So this is all about those changes. Again, if anybody got any questions about the PCIDSS, then shout up. So the way that merchants comply or demonstrate compliance, there's 4 levels within it, and it all depends on how many cardholder transactions you're doing. So if you're doing under 20,000 from memory, then you're a level 4 merchant, and you're allowed to self-assess using a self-assessment questionnaire, an SAQ, a self-assessment questionnaire. And if you're doing, I think over a million transactions a year, forgive me, I should know this, then you're a level 1 merchant, and you have to have an external third-party qualified security assessor come and assess your compliance, which is what a QSA is, a qualified security assessor. And if you're in the middle, a level 2 or a level 3 merchant, level 3 merchants can self-assess, and level 2 merchants, it's really up to their bank. Some level 2 merchants can self-assess, and some level 2 merchants have to have an external third-party assessment. This is every year. Mm-hmm. Okay. And depending upon the complexity of your cardholder data environment, which potentially driven by the number of and different types of channels of payment you've got. So you might have a web store, you know, on like e-commerce store. You might have some of our clients have got like cash point machine type things, you know, for taking payments. Some have got face-to-face, you know, booths where you can go and pay. Some take postal mail order type payments. Some have got contact centers. On all these different channels of payment have got different security requirements around them. So e-commerce potentially is the most secure method, and face-to-face, you know, and telephones are potentially the least secure, especially if you're using voice over IP telephony. So you've got basically, you know, assess for each channel, you know, the various requirements for compliance. So there's four levels. I know I'm not explaining this very well. And then if you're assessing, if you've got like e-commerce, we have got some sites on this somewhere. E-commerce is potentially really simple. Therefore, you've got fewer controls, like 76 controls you've got to demonstrate compliance against. If you're storing cardholder data, then you're on a SAQD potentially, and that's like 326 controls you've got to comply with. So the more you contract out to professional service providers your cardholder data processing activities, then the fewer controls you as a merchant have got to demonstrate compliance against. So you've got all these different self-assessment questionnaires, SEQ A, B, C, D, CVC, CVT, depending upon what your channel is. So if you've got a web channel, then that's what's called an SEQ A. And if you've got face-to-face, I think that's an SEQ C. If you've got point of interaction devices, you know, at checkout points, that's an SEQ B, for instance. So That's how it works. I probably haven't explained it very well. I think I explained it better last time around. But anyway, what's happened is that the requirements are changing, and you know, there's some significant changes. So what it will affect is your people, your premises, and your processes and your technologies. So changing people stuff is quite easy, like a rewrite your policy, distribute it out, dawdle. Changing your technology, the way you're encrypting data, potentially is a lot more of a lead-in time. You know what I mean? So that's why we've got to start thinking about it now.
So the changes, are they going to make it more complex? Because I remember you talking me through it one time, and the amount of things that you've got to look at, the assessment itself is massive. So is that going to become even more complicated?
It is. Yeah, it is. I mean, some of the requirements, there's some new requirements in which weren't there before. So, for instance, there's a requirement, one of the changes, there's currently a requirement to install anti-malware software on systems that are prone to attack through malware. Basically, that's effectively what it says. That requirement has changed, and not only do you have to do that in a slightly different way, which we'll cover off in a minute, you also have to have anti-phishing solutions as well. So that's a new requirement. Anti-phishing was never there before. Anti-phishing is now something you're going to have to put in place. Not on all these SAQs. You know, as I say, if you've got a simple contracted out web processing environment, then that particular requirement might not be part of your assessment because it might not be. Yeah. But if it
makes sense. I mean, the amount of, you know, phishing attempts that have increased since, I guess, the beginning of COVID, really. It's just increased exponentially, hasn't it?
Yeah, because with COVID, I mean, do you remember before COVID, there were people, retailers would say, you know, minimum spend £5 if you're using a card because of the fees that they had to pay. Now, well, during COVID, it was, oh, I don't want to touch your cash because it might be infected. So pay by card and, you know, tap and go type of thing. And now, you know, there's an explosion of retailers, admittedly, mostly smaller ones, therefore level 4 and level 3 merchants. But there's an explosion of people taking card payments. Now, they all have to do an annual attestation of compliance, but they'll all be self-assessing. But, you know, big question, do they understand the requirement of the PCI DSS? Well, possibly not, you know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of new requirements and there's a lot of changes to the requirements as well. So, for instance, you know, the current password requirement is for 7 characters minimum, changed every 90 days. Now, that's all changed. So and also there's a choice now, so you don't have to have I'll come on to that in a second. I'm mixing things up here, Jasmine, and I, it's full of PCI stuff. But I mean, the new requirement is kind of at least 12 characters or 8 if your systems don't permit 12, and they've got to be alphanumeric, and you can't reuse your last 4 passwords, and you've got to have a lockout after 10 failed attempts and a lockout of 30 minutes. So this is how prescriptive it is. You know, if your systems aren't configured like that, then you aren't compliant. And what we have to do as QSAs when we're doing an assessment is we have to look at the configuration of a sample of machines and check they're configured that way. So it takes blooming ages to do an assessment, to be honest.
Yeah. How long about? Or does it depend on the size of the organization?
Yeah, it depends on the number of channels and the size as well. So we have to inspect a representative sample of all the people, process and technology involved. So if you've got a complex environment in multiple locations, then we've got to go and have a look at a sample of those locations. So we have a national, couple of national retailers. They got, one of them's got 470 stores. So we look at 20 stores a year in different parts of the country. And we're checking in the stores, you know, they've got checkouts with point of interaction devices, you know, chip and pin machines. So we're inspecting those chip and pin machines. We're checking the processes inside the stores. They have a contact center, so we have to go and check that. But if they've got like 10 servers, we have another client in Manchester that's an online travel business, and they've got 10 servers. We've got to have a look at a representative sample of the servers. So we have to look at three of the servers, two of the firewalls, you know, so on and so forth. So depending on, so a simple assessment is probably 7 days minimum, and a complex one is a month, you know. And it has been times, remember when Tom had to go off to Poland and France and Spain to inspect filling stations? So in on the continent, there was much more, you know, pay by card on the filling station. It's pretty good in the UK now, but I remember like a decade or two ago, that was what it was. In Italy, there was no manned petrol station. It was all card payments. So Tom used to go spend a week in Poland, a week in Spain, a week in France, looking at forecourts.
You know, I swear it was a little looking for a QSA. Can I fill that role? I wouldn't mind that job.
Italy, Spain, yeah.
Yeah.
Norway, we've been to, yeah, all sorts of places. So we're licensed to work in Europe. So, you know, if we want to, if we have an international client with operations in Australia and America, then we have to subcontract that work out. Again, there's a mechanism, the PCI, for us to do that, and we have to engage a locally licensed. So we're licensed to work across Europe on the PCI DSS.
I've got a question here from Dominic. So banks offer the assessment and action plan service to their clients. What are the possible penalties for false or inaccurate self-assessment?
Well, basically, if it's like a bit like the, well, I tell you what, we have to fill in a 400, currently the template's 498 pages. We have to fill in a 498 page report. That's a template. Once you've filled it in, it's much bigger than that. And they do get read, because they do occasionally come back to us from the PCI Security Council, the SSC, and they ask us questions about an assessment we've filled in. So I would have assumed that they read the SAQs that people fill in as well. A lot of it's done online. The penalties are that ultimately it's the bank, your bank that you contract with. So usually what happens is if you are found to be non-compliant or have a breach, that's usually how you're found to be non-compliant, then they will increase the fees of your transactions. It'll charge more per transaction, and they might levy a fine, and the fines are published in the contracts. So that's usually the penalty. So I'm not aware of any kind of active policing of the PCI DSS, as I'm not aware of any active policing of the GDPR, you know, by the supervisory authorities. So if you're found to be non-compliant, it's often because of a breach. So Marriott Hotels, for instance, they had a big data protection breach, didn't they? They were using their PCI QSA reports as mitigation, saying, well, look, we've had security checks done. That highlighted the fact they weren't compliant to the Security Council. So, you know, it was through a breach that they were found to be non-compliant with the PCI DSS. But, you know, ultimately your bank could say, well, we're not allowing you to take card payments anymore. Ultimately, they could say that, but why would they? Because that's counter to their business objective, isn't it? So what they'll try and do, I should imagine, is levy higher fines and prices and fines.
Okay. So one of the changes is the requirement for a formalized annual scope and exercise. You say this is an annual requirement.
So that's a good point you raised there, Jasmine, because in the past there wasn't a specific requirement. So the PCI is very, very prescriptive. I'll find some stuff and show you on the screen, right? I'll share my screen. But there was never a formal, explicit requirement to do a scoping exercise. As a QSA, we would go in the opening meeting, we'd say, right, you know, tell us about the scope of your cardholder data environment, show us data flow diagrams, show us your network documentation, and we would talk through how they arrived at that scope and that scoping exercise. But now in version 4, there is a requirement to do a formal scoping exercise. So you know, that is fairly straightforward if you've got that type of information to hand. But if you haven't got a technical diagram and you haven't got data flow diagrams and you haven't got lists of service providers and you haven't got lists of the locations where you're processing card data and all that type of stuff, you're going to have to find that information and fill it in on the new forms that have come out. So it was always there as an implied thing, but it's now, you know, explicitly required. So if I share my screen again, those who know the PSA DSS will know this world of pain. Those who don't, let me show which screen to share. And I like it actually, and we've taken bits of this approach in our GDPR auditing. So, you know, requirement 1.2.4, this is a self-assessment questionnaire. It says at the top of my screen, SAQD, I think it is. So requirement 1.2.4 is to maintain accurate data flow diagrams. We're required to examine the data flow diagrams and observe the network configurations, actually go into the server room and check them out, see if they comply with the network diagram. Examine any other documentation and interview the personnel responsible for the data flow diagram and maintaining it. And then we've got to assess, and this is what you've got to assess if you're self-assessing, whether that control is in place, in place with the compensating control. There's a new thing, this is new, which was in place with remediation, or that control is not applicable, or that control was not tested, or that control is not in place. And then you'll see through here, you know, it's all highly, highly, highly prescriptive. There's a bit more flexibility now because there's a new approach within, this is called the defined approach, where you have to fulfill the defined requirements of the PCI DSS. But if you're not self-assessing, if you're getting a QSA to do your assessment, then you can actually have a customized approach. You can design your own controls. And you can devise your own testing approach, and we will come and test out those controls and that testing approach. And it doesn't have to comply with the defined requirements of the PCI. Again, this is a new thing, but it looks to me like it's an absolute ton of work to build a customized approach. One example might be, you know, if your systems can't fulfill the password requirement, you know, your systems won't allow you to have a 12 character multi alphanumeric password, etc., then what you can do is have a compensating control that fulfills the intent of that control, i.e. a secure system.
So would that be like two-factor?
No, that's a different thing. There's a whole load of requirements around multi-factor authentication as well, but what some people say is, well, hang on a minute, passwords that are 7 characters that change every 90 days is not that secure now these days. You know, that's an insecure method. And I think everybody in the security industry would agree, you know, that encourages people to write them down and because they can't remember them, blah, blah, blah. So what you might say is, well, we have designed a way of securing our systems, which is using biometrics, not passwords. Therefore, it doesn't comply with the defined requirement approach, but it complies with the intent of the requirement, which is to build a secure system. So in that respect, you could say we've got something that's even stronger than the requirement. It's a customized approach. This is how we're going to define it. This is how we're going to risk assess it, because that's a new thing as well. This is how we're going to test it. We would, as a QSA, go in and check the test procedures, check the evidence that's in place, and then assess as whether we think it fulfills the intent of the requirement. Again, that's a new thing, but that's not available for people self-assessing. That's only available if you've got a QSA type of assessment.
To check it, yeah.
Yeah, the customized approach. So I can't remember what your question was, but...
Anyway, well, there's another question in chat, so we'll move on. Are there any new requirements in response to the rise of quantum computing, or are we not there yet, do you think?
I'm not entirely sure. There's nothing specific about that. But again, there's a new requirement about risk assessing your environment. So and certainly there's what's called a targeted risk approach. No, a targeted risk assessment. So if you're the PCI in some respects has loosened up a little bit. So it allows you now to determine the period of time you're going to scan for malware on some of your systems. but you've got to do a targeted risk assessment of that period of time, and you've got to document it. So quantum computing brings with it a lot of risks, and some of those risks might get picked up in your risk assessment, but nothing explicit and specific about quantum computing in the requirements.
Okay.
Again, it might not, the question might not be broad, it might be quite specific, in which case, you know, by all means, let's narrow it down. But that's I mean, there's risks all the way through. I mean, you know, there's a new requirement to check HTTP headers and scripts of public-facing web pages. So I guess, again, this is brand new. So, you know, this is trying to guard against Magikart attacks, you know, online skimming techniques, which, you know, where people are stealing cardholder data or personal data through online skimming. So, you know, you've got to have a tamper detection solution implemented that alerts to any unauthorized modifications of HTTP headers and the content of payments pages received by the consumer's browser. So again, the services like RapidSpike, we've had on here before, RapidSpike have got a great service that provide that kind of solution. But this is a brand new requirement. So again, quantum computing might be something that has led to this new requirement, but it's not specific in there.
Okay. So another of the changes. So roles and responsibilities now need to be explicitly defined.
Yeah, again, that's another good one. So at the start of every requirement, so I've showed you the requirements on the screen, they're all numbered, yeah, 1.1.3, 1.1, mm-hmm. etc. So the first requirement of every of the major 12 requirements, the first sub-requirement, sorry, of all the major 12 requirements, is to define the roles, responsibilities, and ownership of all the tasks involved in that fulfilling that requirement. So responsibilities must be formally documented, they must be assigned, they must be understood by the owner, must be properly communicated. Again, we need to go and assess how that's in place, whether that's in place, into the people to check they know what it should be, is it in their job specifications, etc., etc. So those who are self-assessing have still got that requirement, and they've still got to go through this process of determining how are they meeting that requirement. But again, that's a new thing.
Yeah, you'd think that would be in already, to be honest.
Well, it was, again, at a high level, but this is now detailed for each of the major requirements. You know, so, you know, who is involved in each of these requirements, and, you know, what's their role and what's their responsibilities, and where is it documented and how is it communicated? It wasn't quite so granular before. So it was there, but high level. And again, my worry is that though I've been to do sort of guidance sessions on one very memorable, a local authority who were using a portal to self-assess, and it wasn't asking the right questions. So they weren't giving the right answers. You know, and I was saying, well, you haven't got this in place, and you're attesting that you have. You haven't, you know, show me evidence of it being in place. So my worry is that people who are doing SAQs, you know, unless they start getting their head around this now, they're going to look at these things and not really going to know how to deal with them, these questions on their questionnaires. But it's in there in every single major requirement, you know, 1.1.1, 2.1.1, 3.1.1 is all about, you know, definition of responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a lot about another change.
Yeah, this again, I need to be careful how I explain this, because I'm likely to kind of not explain it very well, but so some changes to hashing and encryption.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hopefully everyone knows what a hash is. So a hash is a one-way conversion. So encryption is about, scrambling something up with the intention of decrypting it later. Yeah. So, you know, imagine a document, you encrypt it using a cipher, you share the cipher with somebody else so they can decrypt it. You know, so it's encryption, decryption. Hashing is different. So hashing is used mainly for authentication. So imagine your password. You basically randomize using an algorithm. Randomize the letters in your password, and by applying this algorithm, you end up with a unique string. Effectively, yeah. So every time you run your password through that hash, you end up with the same result. But if you change your password, you get with a different output. Your hash is different because, you know, the way the algorithm works, it'll apply a different rule to it. So it's a good way of authenticating. I didn't explain that very well, but it's a good way of authenticating because the hash for your password is never going to change until you change your password. But guessing it is really hard because you've got to know the algorithm to guess how it's going to end up once you've hashed it. And there's a kind of a further step, which is what's called a salted hash, where you chuck something else into your password, let's say on the end, to add a random thing that is going to make it even more difficult to guess your password. So again, quantum computing has moved on leaps and bounds, and it's now it's possible to crack some hashes, and therefore they've beefed up the requirements within the PCI DSS. Where was I going with this? Yeah, so there's a requirement, so changes to requirements for hashing now. So more things have got to be hashed using stronger algorithms, again, in some of the requirements.
Do you have any examples of that?
Let me think about that one. Get a practical example and come back to it.
Okay. So moving on in the meantime, I'll probably come and see it like 1 a.m. or something. You'll be trying to sleep and you'll come up with an example. But
I tell you, yeah, so basically if you're storing the PAN, the primary count number, yeah, the long digits, yeah. then you currently under 3.2.1 only have to hash the sensitive parts of the PAN. But in the version 4, you have to hash the whole PAN, and you have to use an entirely new algorithm to make it more secure. So again, this hashing and encryption are highly complicated for little brains like mine, but they are highly complicated. The requirements are there and they're different. That means you're going to have new technologies to apply the hashing to potentially different parts of the data. Mm-hmm. So in the processes as well, they'll need modification.
So moving on, there is a formal risk assessment process that is going to be part of version 4.
Yeah, so I've kind of alluded to that. That's a kind of a targeted risk analysis. So wherever there's flexibility, there's actually quite a lot of flexibility in version 4, but wherever there is flexibility is allowed, then you must perform at least annually a targeted risk assessment. And there's a new form for doing that in Appendix E, I think, of the report on compliance. So examples of where controls are performed periodically. Then you need to go through a risk assessment and document, and that has to be provided to the assessor prior to the review. You can't be doing this during the review. It's all got to be done in advance, and evidence it's been done in advance. So for instance, in requirement 12.10, you've got to have an incident response plan. Yeah, so that makes sense. And that's got to be reviewed every 12 months. And designated personnel, so that's another job you've got to do, designate who's going to do it, who've got to be available 24/7 to respond to suspected and confirmed incidents. They need training on a periodic basis. It's up to you as a merchant to determine what that periodic basis is, but you've got to have a targeted risk assessment around that. Yeah, so you've got to then do a targeted risk assessment. When are we going to do this periodic training? Is it the same for every individual? So that all needs documenting in this targeted risk assessment. And there's probably 20 areas where you may be required to a TRA, targeted risk assessment.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like this accountability principle in the GDPR. You know, you're getting flexibility, but with that flex comes a much greater degree of accountability. Does that make sense? So
yeah. It's funny, there are a lot of similarities when you can compare it to data protection legislation, but also it makes you think that data protection legislation could be a lot more explanatory, maybe, in terms of what you should do. There's a lot of grey areas in data protection, whereas this is very structured.
this is very, very, very prescriptive. You know, it is. When I remember doing kind of assessments of firewalls, we've actually got to log, I said this before, got to log onto the firewall, check the rule sets, comply with the network diagram, you know, and, you know, the PCIDSS specifies what should be in those rules, what traffic is meant to be allowed through a firewall, and we've got to check it's configured correctly. There's a lot of work involved in one of these. And also, they're not keen on you doing remote assessments. There's a whole set of rules around what you can remote assess, what you can't remote assess. So this is, a lot of it is on-site assessments.
Even with SAQs or?
No, SAQs are done by the vendor themselves. So a self-assessment questionnaire, you know, they would, you know, they maybe have an internal security assessor, a qualified ISA, or they might not, you know, they don't have to have, but somebody has ultimately got to sign to say, you know, I am happy that, you know, we are attesting to our compliance. We have done an assessment form. They filled in the form and attest to their compliance.
So in comparison to the, is it the ROC?
The report on compliance, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'm doing well. how long is the SAQ?
Well, the SAQD is 120-odd pages. I've got a screen I'm open now, so 118 pages. And SAQA, which is...
Is that the
template? Yeah, so a merchant who's self-assessing, you know, let's say they've got a fairly simple arrangement. This is an SAQA. There's 40 pages. And you'll see also that not all the controls are in here. So they've only got 3.2. to fill in 3.2.1, you know, and then 6.3.1, so the whole of requirement 3, 4, and 5, they're not required to comply with because of the way they've got their, you know, systems configured. You know, those threats don't exist in that channel for that particular, you know, way of working. So there's 41 pages, and, you know, they just have to tick whether there's, you know, in place with the compensated control. CCW is a case control worksheet. If you're doing the assessment and you're not compliant, but then you can quickly make yourself compliant, then we would now, this is a new way of assessing, you would say, well, that's in place with remediation. So, and again, I suspect if you submit an SAQ 2 years on the trot with in place remediation for the same control, that would be a problem. It'd probably get picked up as being a problem. You know, why wasn't that remediated properly? Why was non-compliance found on the second year's assessment? Although I'm not sure that people self-assessing, you know, I'm not sure how thorough their job is. Or, you know, this control is not applicable for whatever reason or not in place. So this is what, you know, you would fill in as an SAQ submission. And then there's a separate document, which is your attestation of compliance. Again, that's just, you know, what you got to fill in. So not all the controls are relevant for the SAQA, which is pretty much, you know, outsourced e-commerce. So you're outsourcing, you know, you've got an iframe that links to your payment page, or, you know, you've got, you know, direct link to the secure payment page, which is approved by the PCISSC. So it depends, you know, different number of controls and different number of pages for whichever self-assessing questionnaire you're filling in. Now, if you've got multiple channels, so there's two ways of doing this. You either fill in an SAQA for your e-commerce and an SAQC for your stores, or you fill in an SAQD and just fill in the relevant parts of it, in which case you'd be saying, well, this isn't applicable to our environment because we haven't got a channel that requirement is relevant for. Two ways of doing it.
Okay, that's interesting. So to go over I think you've touched on, you know, most of the changes, maybe some more of a light touch than others, but is there anything that you want to make people aware of, you know, with the new changes in particular?
I think we're going to do some more blogs and release some more information about it. We've got we've got a spreadsheet which is mapping which controls or which requirements are present in which self-assessment questionnaire. So again, that could be a helpful resource because you could just like filter it. It's in Excel, so you filter it. I've got SAQA, therefore I know I've got these controls to fill in. All this paperwork is available from the PCI Security Council website. You know, these templated SAQs, they're all there to download. The main thing really is to get hold of it and figure out what it means, you know, what bits are going to change for you. And if you need to talk through our advice, you know, reach out to, you know, somebody, preferably a QSA practice who knows you know, who've been properly trained by the Security Council to comment on it. So that's what I would say, you know, get ahead of it whilst we can. Some of these things are not coming into effect. So they'd be considered to be best practice for a period of time. I think I saw a red flag on one of these here that it's been best practice for you know, a couple of years and or a year, and then it will become a requirement. So you can start building your controls to meet the requirements now.
So will that be 2025?
Yeah, 31st of March 2025.
On my birthday.
You know. Is it? Yeah. Is it really? Well, GDPR Day was my dad's birthday, so that's how I remember that. She'll remember your birthday from now on. Expect a card and a bunch of flowers every year.
Yeah, I'll expect that. great. Well.
Yeah. So this is saying it's best practice until its effective date. You know. So you know, we should be starting to put controls in now that meet the requirements, or at least planning for them.
There's enough
opinion
to think about, isn't there?
Yeah, actually, I'm not sharing.
Plenty of time, but it'll probably come around quickly.
Yeah, I think I've stopped sharing my screen. So
yeah,
it'll like the GDPR. You know, everyone will say, "Oh, that's not, no time to think, no need to think about that now." You know, but some of these environments are very complicated. You know, and some of the, you know, like monitoring scripts and HTTP footers, you know, it requires a technical solution. So, you know, we need to start thinking about that now. We could put that in place now. There's no detriment to putting it in place now, apart from the fact it's likely to be an increased budget. The other thing is that the time it takes to do an assessment, whether it's internal or external, is probably going to increase. And therefore, you might have to budget more time and resource and money for it. If you want to use the customized approach, there's a long lead in for that. So some of these people on here might be level one and level two merchants or level three or four merchant who want to have a QSA assessment and they want to use a customized approach. Again, that is going to require quite a lot of work. We're not allowed to design and test the same person can't design and test a customized approach. So if I design one for a client, I'll forget Jamie to assess it or Andrew to assess it. So if a client designs their own, then we can assess it. So again, if you want to go down that route, we need to have a look at that. So again, another factor is that a compensated control can be used where there's a legitimate business reason or technical reason why you can't meet the control. You can then put a compensating control in, but that's not the case for a customized approach. It's not designed to fulfill or meet, you know, the a legitimate, you know, technical or business issue. This is about enhancing, you know, enhancements to the PCI environment.
Sorry, we've got I'm trying to find a little way that I can sneak into your talking. But we've got a comment in the chat from Joe. Are we saying we have to be compliant by the 31st of March 2025?
Yeah. So
I'd just like to add to that as well. Would that mean that we have to have had, well, you know, relevant organisations had to have complete their assessments by this time in line with the version 4 changes?
Yeah, so all assessments from the 1st of April 2025 will be on the new format.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're not allowed to do. I've got an assessment coming up in Manchester in a few weeks' time. It takes 3 weeks to do. We have to do that against 3.2.1 because we're not trained or qualified yet to version 4. So we've all got to go through retraining. So version 4 becomes effective from the 31st of March 2024. So, you know, up to that point, we're probably all going to be assessing against 3.2.1, but we should be building controls to meet the new requirement, in my opinion. But from the 1st of April, all assessments will be against the new requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's, you know, I think, you know, there might be a lot to do. There might not be a lot to do. You know, if you've got your own e-commerce site that you've built and you maintain and it's storing cardinal data, you're going to have to get your head around this pretty sharpish, because there might be some major architectural changes to how you got things set up. If you got fairly superficial or easy to fix things, like it's all contracted out, you might have a retail store, you know, you might have all point of interaction devices, chip and pin machines, you know, direct link to the public telephony network, so that's probably easy to meet compliance against the new standard easier, you know. So it really depends on, again, understanding what you've got and your channels and the way it's all set up. That's the key, really.
From your experience, obviously, you know, you've got to hire someone external to complete the rock. I'm just going to call it the rock. Do you assist with a lot of SAQs or?
No, we don't assist. We don't do many. No. I maybe I'm a bit cynical, Jazz, about this, but I mean, we've been asked to do a few as consulting briefs, you know, so you can have an assisted SAQ, you know, assisted by a QSA. But in the main, you know, what we find is that we're absolutely rigorous because we have to be about, if I do a Duff assessment, I lose my badge, my ability to do these things. So I'm really protective of that. Mm-hmm. And it actually costs an awful lot of money. It costs us as a business about 50 grand to keep our QSA badge. So it's quite expensive insurance. I don't talk about insurance. Insurances and training and all sorts of other stuff. So I'm looking with a much more critical eye, having much more experience of other environments, at somebody else's SAQ. And people don't, if I'm being honest, people don't want to hear that. They don't want you to pick holes because then they've got to do something about it. So again, in my limited experience of helping people with SAQs is, you know, they don't want a QSA coming in saying, but you're doing this wrong, or that's not rigorous enough, and that's not a big enough sample.
You know,
they want it done. They want to keep taking card of payments. It's never been a problem in the past. Why is it suddenly a problem now? Why has this smart ass QSA come in and picked a load of holes in our SAQ? You know, do we have to do it? That's kind of the approach. So
yeah.
My view is it's good to get an external assessment, because ultimately if you had a breach, you'd have a problem.
Would you see that as one of the issues then? It's more seen as a tick box exercise.
Don't put words in my mouth, but you know, I have found that. You know, but I think where we are as a business is we've got to help our clients understand and apply the new requirements. And those who we are assessing, we've got to, you know, make sure that when they get to assessment, they pass. You know, ultimately, we're there to try and get them through. But everybody else who's self-assessing, you know, I think that's an opportunity for us as a business, you know, to help people understand the changes and what it means, you know, and test the tolerances. You know, does it really mean that? Do we really have to do that? You know, well, maybe you could get away with doing this in a different way. So, you know, I think there's opportunity to help people from a consultancy point of view, understand it, understand the implications of it, understand how to apply it. But in terms of the SA, you know, those who are doing SAQs, you know, they at some point will be contacted by their bank, and would have thought, given a set of new paperwork to fill in, whether there's any training that comes with that, whether there's any further explanatory notes that go with that, don't know. But there is a lot of information out there. You know, for us, you know, as QSAs, there's tons and tons and tons of resources for us. And as I say, I'm going on this 3-day conference, got to do the retraining.
When do you think
you'll do a new exam?
Well, when will you have done the retraining and the exam? When will you be qualified with the changes?
There's no exam yet for version 4, so I've got to do a transitional training course, which I'm most of the way through. As I said before, it's not very exciting stuff. I've virtually finished that. I've got to do my 3.2.1 recertification exam by the 17th of October. That will requalify me to do 3.2.1, providing a pass, of course. And then during the course of this coming year, I will have to do a version 4 exam, and possibly another training course, another 3 or 5 day training course. And I'm off to Milan to do the conference, because a lot of that is about, you know, meeting the people who've written this and really getting into detail about, you know, what does it mean, how do we assess it, you know, how do we advise people about it. So again, that's going to be really interesting to go and take part in that. There's quite a big community, the PCI community.
No,
as I say, it's a global thing. So there's a North American conference, a European conference, and an Asia Pacific conference. I'm not going to all three, sadly. I'm just going to the European one.
I'll go to one if you want. I'll take notes.
I mean, I like it. I have to do a mental gear shift between GDPR and PCI DSS. I like it, but it's very technical. And, you know, once I get into it, then all the technical stuff comes back to me, and I tend to forget a lot of the GDPR stuff. Effectively, it evaporates out of my small brain. And then when I come back to the GDPR stuff, I really, my passion in that area anyway. So I really get into that again, and a lot of the PCI stuff evaporates out of my head temporarily. So I don't know if anybody else who's dealing with both standards, but you really have to do, I have to do a mental gear shift when I'm looking between the two.
I mean, everyone at DPP knows that you're very thorough with whatever you do.
Well, I try to be.
Yeah, sometimes there's a bit of hesitation before sending things over to you to be checked, because we know it's going to come back with a lot of questions, but it is for the best. Obviously, that shows through your PCI DSS side as well.
And we've got a good team doing this. I think we're probably going to recruit another QSA in the next few months. But, you know, we've got Jamie, who's Southampton based. He's got years. He used to work at Visa. He's got 20 years experience working in the payment card industry. He's been working with the standard for a long time. Got Andrew, who is, Andrew is a complete and utter techie. And so he's really understands the technology. He's been a QSA for 15 years. But I think we probably want another one as well. Again, in the new standard, we have to have a formal QA process, which gets inspected every year. Again, it's prescriptive about how we work as a practice, and you have to have a different QSA QA in the work of a QSA. Yeah. So, we're probably going to have to find another QSA, recruit another QSA, just to add to the team, adds a bit more depth to it.
Yeah, sure. So, anyone's listening?
Yeah. Francis getting lost in the world of PCI, yeah.
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 Well, I think that about sums up, to be fair. We filled the hour.
I might have not explained stuff very well, Jasmine. So apologies if I haven't.
I understood it, so I think that says
muddled in my enthusiasm to try
and. There's not been many questions as well, so.
Because I've fallen asleep. My enthusiasm to try and get on and answer the questions and give examples. I might have not articulated that particularly. In which case, I apologise. But hopefully, people have got the thread of this. And as I say, we'll be doing some more blogs and some more papers on this, so watch this space, and we'll get some information out that aim of helping people understand it. Anyway, you've done a great job, Jasmine, so thank you very much for chairing and hosting.
That's right, try my best. No worries. I'd say anytime, but I don't really mean it. No, it's been fun. Thank you for, I guess, all of your knowledge, sharing all of your knowledge with us. And yeah, we'll be back next week, I think, with the GDPR radio. Is that right, Miles?
Yeah, we're back with GDPR radio next week. I'm not sure what the following session is, but I'll get the invite sent out later today for next week.
Great. Well, yeah, thank you everyone for joining, and have a great long weekend.
Yes, thank you all.
See you later.
Yeah. Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.